Duality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. While millions of Americans lack adequate health coverage, the Pentagon has a new nuclear bomber to flaunt. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Common Dreams, peace and economic justice advocates responded to the imminent unveiling recently of the United States Air Force's new $750 million per plane nuclear bomber by reiterating accusations of misplaced priorities in a nation where tens of millions of people live in poverty and lack adequate healthcare coverage. Military-industrial complex giant Northrop Grumman is set to introduce its B-21 Raider. The B-21, whose development was 30 years in the making and whose total project cost is expected to exceed $200 billion, is tapped to replace the aging B-2 Spirit. One thing the world definitely does not need is another stealth bomber, Binya Benjamin, co-founder of the peace group Code Pink, told Common Dreams. Benjamin added, "This ominous death machine, with its price tag of $750 million a pop, brings huge profits to Northrop Grumman, but takes our society one more step down the road of a spiritual death." Referring to Rev. Martin Luther King Jr.'s 1967 anti-war speech, saying, "Beyond Vietnam, a time to break silence," in which the civil rights leader called the U.S. government the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today. Noting the B-21's impending introduction, Canadian professor Christopher Stonebanks tweeted recently, "Hey, how's the good old USA doing on free healthcare, eliminating poverty, and accessible education for all? What? Oh, I see. They have a new stealth bomber. Okay, and their citizens are good with that trade-off?" The Pentagon, which recently failed its fifth consecutive annual audit, is slated to get $847 billion in 2023 after Congress rubber stamps the next National Defense Authorization Act, possibly as soon as this month. That's more than the combined military spending of China, India, the UK, Russia, France, Germany, Saudi Arabia, Japan, and South Korea, according to the National Priorities Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, IPS. Meanwhile, CNBC reported Most American workers dream of a comfortable retirement, yet many find their money falls short of meeting that goal when they reach their golden years. Much of the problem has to do with how the retirement system has evolved. Pension plans that used to guarantee a stream of post-career income from employers have given way to 401k plans and other retirement accounts that put the responsibility on workers themselves to save. Recently, private and public industry leaders came together in Washington, D.C. at an event hosted by the Employee Benefits Research Institute to identify ways to better help workers avoid a shortfall. U.S. Secretary of Labor Marty Walsh recalled how his father, a construction worker, retired with a pension, an annuity that has enabled his mother to remain financially stable when he died. "There are too many Americans who don't have that future stability," Walsh said. "Having a retirement plan is an essential component of a good job," he added. Yet many Americans don't have any retirement savings or plan at all, and many of those workers are approaching the end of their working careers, Walsh said. For people of color, the situation is even more dire, he noted. Just 36% of black households ages 55 to 64 have any retirement savings, and that number goes down to 30% for Hispanic households. Those that do have savings often have very little set aside, according to Walsh. "This is a crisis that we have to address in the United States of America," Walsh said. As many as 57 million Americans lack access to a workplace retirement saving plan, said Ed Morphy, president and CEO of Empower, a provider of retirement services. Morphy said, "We know that if people aren't covered by workplace savings, they don't save. If they don't access through payroll deduction, they just flat out don't save." Employers that do not offer retirement plans include small businesses like daycare centers, hair salons, auto shops, and restaurants that are just trying to make it work, Walsh noted. "The lack of retirement plan coverage presents an opportunity for the financial industry and government to work together to find solutions," Walsh said. "For too long, the message to workers has been you're not saving enough, and that may be true, but that's certainly not the whole story." California is one of a handful of states that has implemented automatic individual retirement accounts to help bridge that gap for workers who lack access to retirement plans through their employers. The program called CalSavers opened in 2019 to employers with five or more employees. Those that opt out are required to begin offering their own retirement plan per California rules. CalSavers is seeing positive results, according to Katie Selensky, executive director of the program. About 65% of employees who are automatically enrolled in the program stay in.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله dear listeners, sisters and brothers from all around the world. Welcome to another episode of
Youth Station.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, my dear sister and all your listeners there. I hope you're all doing well.
I'm very happy to be here. You know, Bita, it's been so long. And when I did not come to here, it feels like a lifetime.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like our hometown somehow.
Yeah.
Here, yeah.
Since we're talking to our friends, to the youth. So it feels home. Bita, have you, I can't say have you, because now it happens pretty much and we see it in different departments.
Yeah.
Whether it be among your friends or among your relatives or whomever. There are single parents around us.
Yeah.
They are
unfortunately
living all alone. And then they have some kids. And just imagine these kids are growing up. And then there are plenty much of difficulties.
Exactly. You know, first of all, let's give a kind of explanation of a single parent way of relatives and so on to the listeners. As all you know, a single parent is a person who just has a child or children but have to go under the responsibility of bringing up the child or children himself or herself, as you know.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think the more damage it causes to the children more than the parents, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And I have these kind of things in my relatives and some of my friends, and when I see them, it may look actually something really natural.
Actually, they
but
have
actually,
too much of problems.
Deep in themselves, I think they have a lot of problems,
yeah.
Which comes from these kind of single parent household or something.
Mm. So, you know, there comes a question. Whenever I see these sort of examples, you know, as you just mentioned, we see a lot of them among the relatives or among the friends. And this question rises in my head that couldn't they just stay a little longer for a time when their children are grown up enough to understand what's going on around them?
You mean they sacrifice their time because of their children, even if that person is our children? We cannot do that. It's actually impossible.
You know,
if it was supposed to, for example, be that good to stay there for the children, it won't come to the point that we have to talk about the single parent. You know what I'm telling you? It's like that, okay, there were some problems. There was something that leads to divorce, I don't know, leads to everything. And you cannot ignore that and tell me that, okay, for that children, you have to stay here. It's impossible.
See, Bita, I'm not saying this. I'm not talking about sacrifice. And I do not say, I actually did not side with those people who say, tolerate the bitterness for the end of your life. I am not of those people.
Okay, you're telling me for 5 or 7 years.
No. It's a lot. Even not this. You know, some,
2 years.
I'm just saying this.
Yeah.
Sometimes the couples will go for divorce as the first and the last solution that comes to their mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, they do it in a heartbeat and they don't question too much.
I think what we actually mostly ignore in our, communication and relation and so on is that we don't talk to each other.
Exactly.
We have
now
to
let's
talk.
Put it in this very point. See, the thing that I wanted to reach to is this very exact thing that sometimes we misunderstand each other. And if we come to talk to each other and if we have even an argument upon something and then come to a conclusion, maybe plenty much of our misconceptions would turn
out
solved. To be. Yeah. But most of them would be solved. Now, let's go for a short break. And then after that, we'll talk about the cause and effect of being a single parent.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners of Youth Station. This is IRIB English Radio. I am here, Asma. And
I'm Bita.
Yes.
Here we're talking about a single parent and, you know, the problems that they are facing. Mm-hmm. And like the parents and also the children.
There are some situations in life that might be avoided by some discussions, by talking about it, by clarifying the situations. Maybe we could just reject the idea of divorce.
But from another point of view, maybe the single parent is, for example, in a situation which the other parent or the other partner is dead or something like that. You know?
Yeah.
What should we do in that situation? I think even in this situation, the problems, the harm to the children are the same, you know. This situation would happen in the past more and more
this
than today.
This one is worse than the first
one, exactly,
I guess.
Yeah, exactly, because you cannot even imagine of being them together.
Yeah.
This is the problem,
yeah, exactly.
I think.
So now there is a single parent. So it has been divorce, it has been death, some yeah. miseries happened. The family has been broken into pieces. Now the mother or the father are going to live alone with their children or with their single child or whatever. So there are too much of problems.
What do you think about the parent or the children are in the most harm in these kind of situations?
I would say children.
Why?
Because the parents have got to the age that they understand what is going on around them. And also, do not forget that they are the cause of this situation.
Yeah.
And from the very first point, you know, they have made a choice when they married their partner. And then after some times, they understood that what they have picked among the crowd was not such a dreamboat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
So it is sort of, if I did it, it is my fault. When I decide to divorce or when something happens that I have to get away from my partner, then I sort of know what is the consequence. And I already am aware.
And it is my choice.
Yeah,
and
I am aware of what is going to happen to me. But the poor child does not have any idea about what's going to happen to him or her because they would go to school, they would go to university, and then... You know what happens at a school
yeah,
when children start
exactly.
talking to each other. And through those chit-chats, plenty much of things are going to be revealed.
To some extent, I do agree with you that, for example, the children, you know, go to school and somewhere else in social, I don't know, situations. They were in that kind of things. And they were talking about their parents. There were other children
yeah,
that are normal.
Yeah, they start comparing
that, yeah,
each other.
Yeah, exactly. And this actually full comparison will lead to, I don't know, anxiety, depression, and
yeah.
so on. Because they think they lack something. And actually, they lack.
Of course. And, you know, I've been reading an article about single parent children. Then it was talking about behavioral problems, you know.
Yeah.
There would come when the situation happens that I am going to be the only parent to my child. Then
yeah.
my child is going to go through too much of traumas without me being aware of them.
Personally, I think that the mother is more important than father growing up the children. But I think these kind of situations that we see around us, like, I don't know, a single parent, just show us that, okay, it's not like that.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them. I mean, the presence of both
exactly.
of them is more important
yeah,
than...
both of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, through psychology
yeah.
studies, they have proved it, that both of them have got a great impact in our life. And the nice thing is that at a certain age, if you do not have a good relationship with your father, then it's going to lead into a trauma. And then at another certain age, if you do not have a certain relationship with your,
with
mother,
your mother,
again, you're going to have some traumas and conflicts.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, let's put it after the break. Let's go for a short break, and then I will talk more about that point. Welcome back, dear listeners of Youth Station. Well, we are talking about single-parent households and the children and the things that happen to them. We talked about psychological points. We said that both of them are important. There is no way for us to claim and assert that, okay, if...
the mother is important
yeah,
or something
the
like that.
The mother is more important or the father is...
Which we believe mostly.
Yeah. So now, the very important fact is that now we're talking about it as something which is, you know, we're talking to each other as we're whispering together
yeah,
like
exactly.
a friend to friend.
Our
but the situation needs a serious treatment, you know. You have to perhaps visit a consultant, go
experts
to
in this
yeah,
world, of
a
course.
Specialist, someone who knows about, I don't know, your problem. You can bear your soul out for them and then ask for some advices according to your situation. Now we're just telling our personal point of view.
Yeah, exactly. But let me give you a good piece of news. You know, in the 17th and 18th centuries,
yeah.
at least one child from three children
mm-hmm.
actually lost their parents because
uh-huh.
of disease or anything, especially the mother.
Yeah.
Because the mother during the pregnancy and something after giving birth to that child would be dead.
Oh,
you know,
that's
and
so
like
painful.
That. And yeah, and fortunately nowadays, because of technology, I don't know, medical science or anything, we are actually, we're far away from these happening
yeah.
that one of our parents would be dead or something at the age of birth or something. But unfortunately, there are other reasons. Like
there are other reasons.
And
yeah.
there are other reasons. Which
other
these
reasons
are so dramatic, you know,
yeah.
and drastic, I think, unfortunately. But the beautiful part is that we can avoid this, but we're not trying to. I don't know why.
Being a single parent?
Yeah, exactly. You know, from the first, actually, step, I mean, when you're going to go through a marriage, you have to imagine the future of this marriage.
Oh, yeah. Now you're talking about idealistic issues, you know. I agree, you know. Yeah. I do believe that if you do not want a bad thing to happen, then you have to think about it many times before it happens. No. People don't go for marriage as a very difficult thing. I sometimes wonder how easy people get married.
You have to first consider all the aspects when you want to go through something, especially marriage. And marriage is something that matters, really matters.
Exactly.
It's not only you. There is the future of someone else.
So, dear youth, we're talking about the very first square because the decision for a marriage is a very important decision in our life.
Exactly.
It's going to be a drastic change. It's going to cause a lot of changes to happen into our life. So we should be very cautious about the decision we're making. So picking the perfect pal for yourself is something. And then trying to understand him or her is another thing.
Exactly. But, you know, despite the beauty of this marriage and so on, it may be a lot of problems with that, you know.
There's even, no maybe, Bita. Yeah. Let me tell you, for sure there must be problems.
Of course, but it may be a lot of problems. Even at any cost, you are considerable, you are conservative of who you are choosing or so on. But maybe, I don't know, 10 years later, 5 years later or so on, you will face some problems. I think the solution is that you have to seek the knowledge of solving these problems in communications, in relations.
As we just said at the very beginning of this episode, see, the most important thing is to come to a way of understanding each other.
Exactly.
This is very important. We can study books. We can go through too much of educating ourselves. We can even listen to the experience of other people.
And
there are
many, family therapists and so on.
Yeah, there are too much of therapists.
They are knowledgeable. They are trained for these kind of issues and they will help us, you know. I think running from these kind of, places and so on that is a fear which exists in all of the people is something really, it's not true.
And you know what?
You have to correct it.
As a children of these families, I would say one thing. All the problems come when, in many cases, I don't say all of the cases.
Yeah.
In many cases, I would say selfishness is the reason for all of these things. When the mother or the father, I mean, the male or the female part of this parenthood starts to think of herself or of himself, then the situation is going to go topsy-turvy.
And let me tell you something really bitter. Sometimes the problem of this single parenthood and the children is the children.
Oh, yeah, sometimes.
You know, and it's so dark that, you know, they are getting divorced because they don't want to go under the responsibility of bringing up the children.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's difficult.
And, you know, there is another point I would love also to mention in here. Sometimes, you know, these early wed people, when you see them, many elders recommend them, okay, bring a child, then your situation is going to be better. If you add another person into your
company, family,
then
the
everything is going to be sweeter. This is a wrong notion, you know? You shouldn't go for the idea of bringing up a child before actually giving it a second thought, you know?
And you shouldn't be a kind of perfectionist and be like, okay, I have to have everything to bring up a child. But it's not like that, okay? If you bring up a child, everything will be solved.
No,
it's not like that.
No.
It's a heavy responsibility that you have to understand it.
Yeah, that's very
important.
And
then go under this.
So marriage is a very important decision that you're going to make in your life. There comes problem as you just go into marriage, but you shouldn't give up because there are some certain situations that you can take for the solution of your problems. You can go to therapists, you can ask other people's advice. Of course, a specialist, not every single person, because there are some people whom chances they might just advise you in a wrong way that would destroy your life even in a worst situation,
so
in a worst way.
So let me give you the gist of our conversation.
Yeah.
I think up to here, seek the knowledge of relation.
Exactly.
Nothing else matters.
Yeah. Now, that is the perfect gist to wrap it
you're
up.
You're welcome.
Yeah. You have to educate yourself and stop being selfish. Think twice before you make any decision in your life, especially marriage, because it is not an easy thing to do.
And sometimes sacrifice is something necessary.
Yeah. Until another session, I bid you farewell.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi
wa barakatuh.
leaders meeting with besieged volunteer forces. On Saturday, 26th of November, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with hundreds of members of the besieged volunteer forces at the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya in Tehran. In this program, we discuss the leader's speech and points of views expressed at this meeting. Please stay with us. On Saturday, 26th of November, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with hundreds of members of the besieged volunteer forces in Tehran. The leader greeted the besieged volunteer forces by saying, "Welcome, my dear brothers and sisters. You are the young, brave members of the besieged. You have illuminated our Hosseiniya with the besieged spirit that exists within you. Praise God. I would like to congratulate you and all the people of Iran on the occasion of Besiege Week." The Besiege was one of Imam Khomeini's greatest initiatives. He announced the establishment of an army of 20 million in the country in his famous speech in November of 1979. Besiege volunteer forces were established in 1979 after Imam Khomeini's announcement. The blessings of the Besiege and this great initiative were so great that Imam Khomeini delivered that outstanding, eloquent speech in praise of the besieged volunteer forces in November of 1988. I will quote a few of Imam Khomeini's eloquent sentences so that you may remember that our dear Imam addressed the besieged in that speech in the same way that a father would express his love for his children. The Imam said, "The besieged are a school of love and an academy of anonymous martyrs who chanted the call to martyrdom and bravery from its lofty minarets. This is splendid discourse. What excellent phrases," the Imam said. "The besieged are a fruitful tree whose blossoms spread the aroma of springs joining together, the freshness of certainty and the story of love." Imam Khomeini went on to say, "I take pride in being a besiegee myself. I would like to kiss the hand of every single one of you." These were the truly unforgettable words of Imam Khomeini. May God bless his soul. You, members of the besieged today, are being addressed by this statement. Imam Khomeini did not say the besieged of the 1980s. He said members of the besieged. You and all future generations were being addressed by the late Imam. May God bless his soul. In further remarks, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, "In his statement of November 1988, Imam Khomeini announced the importance of establishing a besieged for university and seminary students. There is a special meaning behind this. He told the university students and the students of religious sciences to have besieged groups and to be mobilized. This means that besieged is not just a military organization and that besieged should be present in all fields, including in sciences and in religious studies." The leader went on to ask, "What is besieged?" "Besieged is a culture, it is a discourse. Besieged is a way of thinking. What is this way of thinking? What is this culture?" "This culture means serving society and the country without any pretense or expectations. This is very important. It means serving without any expectations, without waiting to be praised, and in many cases, without receiving any funds or provisions to do something. After all, every movement requires provisions, but they enter various fields without such things. They serve selflessly and accept the risk of their service in the path of the Almighty. This is the Basiji culture. But what is the meaning of Basiji culture? It means going into mud up to your knees to remove the mud from houses that have been flooded. It means putting yourself at risk of getting infected with COVID and risking your own life to save the lives of people suffering from COVID. Basiji culture means never getting tired when helping others. Basijis do not wait for others to praise them and to say well done. They provide this valuable service throughout the country. The Basijis have been successful in science, research and the laboratories. These were young people who worked in the fields of science and research, and there were those who had Basiji spirit or worked in laboratories, whether it was for COVID or for other issues. Our nuclear martyrs are an example of this. They were Basijis. Another example is the late Dr. Said Kazemi, who established the Royan Research Institute for Stem Cell Research and Genetics Research. This is the culture of the Basiji. When facing the enemies on the battlefield, they are fearless. The Basiji culture is one that has been built by self-effacing, hard-working volunteers, as stated by the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul. It is a culture of humble, undaunted fighters. It is about serving all the people. It is about serving the country. It means making sacrifices for others and even being oppressed in order to save the oppressed. Turning to recent events in Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "You saw how in recent events in the country, the Basijis were the ones being oppressed while protecting the Iranian people from oppression of a group of rioters who were either unaware, misled, misguided, or foreign mercenaries. Basijis stop the oppression of others. They do not allow themselves to become despondent. This is an important quality of Basiji culture. Despair has no meaning for someone who is part of the Basiji. Praise God, we have millions of official Basiji forces and millions more who are unofficial volunteers. That is, there are the young people in mosques, universities, associations, schools and other places who do the same things as the Basiji and are in fact Basijis, but they're not official members of the Basiji organization. Alongside the Basiji phenomena in our country, we have the Basiji in the Muslim world. There are millions of Basijis in the Islamic world. They are Basiji who do not understand our language, nor do we understand their language, but we share the same heartfelt values. These are also the blessings of the Basiji." In further remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "This is Imam Khomeini's legacy, which remains today, and God willing, it will continue to be with us tomorrow, and the country will see its fruits." Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, introduced the Basiji as a manifestation of the Shajaratul Tayyiba, or the good tree, which has also been mentioned in the Holy Quran. "Have you seen how Allah has drawn a parable? A good principle is like a good tree. Its roots are steady and its branches are in the sky. It gives its fruit every season by the leave of its Lord. The nature of a good tree is that it produces its sweet fruit and gives results in every season. We already spoke about how the Basiji have the potential to move the country forward. I will now talk about some of the achievements of the Basiji volunteer forces. First of all, the presence of the Basiji in any period indicates that the Islamic revolution is alive. It shows that the revolution is thriving. Much of the dismay of those who are frightened and distressed by the word and the name of the revolution. They do not want the revolution to be mentioned. They express hatred towards the Islamic revolution and they reject it. But the presence of the Basiji volunteer forces shows the revolution is very much alive. It's blossoming and it's prospering. So one of the fruits of the Basiji presence is that it shows the regeneration and vitality of the Islamic Revolution. The second thing is the spirit that I mentioned, the spirit of jihadi work, without expecting anything in return, without wanting to reveal your name, without being pretentious. This will create rapid progress in the country. Work that is done with the intention of impressing others in a pretentious manner has no beneficial value. Doing jihadi work without having any expectations will move the country forward. This is another example of the fruits of the Basij. Third point is the element of spirituality is prominent in all activities that are taken by the Basij volunteers. And this element of spirituality is very important. In further remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "The Basij hold a very important position in the political geography of the Islamic world, which I need to briefly explain. Of course, intellectuals, clear-sighted individuals, and you young people should focus on and think about these issues. Western colonialism has a certain line of approach towards this special region of ours, the West Asia region, or the region they call the Middle East. Following the two world wars, Western colonialism, Europe first and then the Americans, paid special attention to this region and established a distinct approach towards it. But why? Because it is an important region. The movements of the Western world's industrial wheels is dependent on oil from this region, from the West Asia or Middle East region. The world's main center for oil is here in this region. The region of West Asia. It links the East to the West. It is the region that connects Asia, Europe and Africa. This is the most important issue in terms of its strategic position." In further remarks, the leader of the Islamic Revolution commented on recent rioting in Iran and negotiations with the United States. The leader said, "Some people claim they understand politics, but it's really upsetting when you see their analysis in newspapers and in some sections of the social media. They say that in order to put an end to the rioting that has been taking place in this country for the past few weeks, you need to solve your problems with the United States first." Now, this is said by those who claim to know about politics and world affairs. They certainly state that you need to solve your problems with America, or they say you should listen to the voice of the people. I have seen these two comments in their writings. Solve your problems with the United States and listen to the voice of the people. But how can the problem with the United States be solved? This is the real question, and it is a very serious question. We do not want to argue with each other. We are asking a question. How can the problem with the United States be solved? Will the problem be solved by sitting down and negotiating and getting a promise from them? If we sit down and negotiate with the United States and make them commit to doing this or that, will the problem be solved? In further remarks, the leader said, "They tell us to stop our nuclear activities. They start by telling us to stop 20% uranium enrichment. Then they tell us to stop 5% uranium enrichment. Next, they tell us to completely halt all kinds of nuclear activities. Then, they will tell us to change the constitution of our country and to remove the Guardian Council. The US is demanding payoffs. If you want to fix your problem with the United States, you must continually surrender to US demands. This is what the Americans really want. Imprison yourself behind your borders, disarm yourselves and shut down your defense industries. What kind of proud, devoted Iranian is willing to give in to those demands?" In concluding remarks, the leader wished success and strength for all members of the Basij volunteer forces, saying, "The final victory would be ours."
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Current world order will be replaced by a new order where US is isolated, Asia powerful, resistance front expanded. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. Ever since the Industrial Revolution took place and the Europeans started advancing and colonizing other countries, they made the people and the countries of the world get used to the fact that submission and dominance are two inevitable corresponding parts of the world. This means that the world is split into domineering governments and countries and states that can be dominated. This has been the situation, and this domination system has been around for several centuries. Everyone agreed that they should accept the domination of Western powers, even their culture and appellations. Let me say this here. I have said it before. They call our region the Middle East. What does the Middle East even mean? It means that the origin and center of the world is Europe, like the story about Mullah Nasruddin, where they asked him where the center of the world is, and he replied, the place where the nail of my donkey's brains are pounded into the ground. That is the center of the world.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Any region that is far from Europe is called the Far East, because it is far from Europe. Whichever country is close to it, like some North African countries, are considered to be in the Near East. Those that are in the middle of these are known as the Middle East. That is the basis for naming countries by Europe. That is how Westerners were so self-entitled. This is why I insist on not calling the Middle East, but West Asia instead. It is in West Asia, after all. Why should we call it the Middle East? The Islamic Republic was the one who formed the spirit of showing resistance toward the tyranny, power-seeking, and hegemony of the domineering powers. The first person in the world to say neither East nor West was Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh.
You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Russian prisoners of war being executed by Ukrainian soldiers. Multiple videos have been released on Ukrainian Telegram channels. The most recent shows 11 Russian soldiers shot in the head after being detained. While both sides accuse each other of war crimes, Kiev is openly flaunting the crimes committed at the hands of its troops. At a press conference in Lugansk, a Russian soldier, Dmitry, recounts what happened when he was captured on the front line.
They ordered me to lie down, hands behind my back. One of them came up to me and hit my back with the handle of his machine gun. They put a bag on my head and waited for their commanders. In some time, the commander came, took the bag off my head, took me by the throat and started to cut my left hand with a knife. It's still functioning badly. He hit me in the teeth. And afterwards, when they took my machine gun from the vehicle, he asked if it was charged. I answered that it wasn't. He took the cartridge from it, clicked it, pointed at my leg and clicked. Nothing happened, because it was really not charged. He said I was lucky.
On the screen, gruesome images. Russian authorities say they have evidence of torture and a lack of provision of basic medical care, leading to unnecessary death.
Now, many of these atrocities are being ignored by media outlets in NATO countries, but Russian journalists, of course, are here transmitting to a Russian audience, which means large parts of the Russian population are becoming increasingly angry at Ukraine and its NATO backers for atrocities committed against Russian soldiers.
The videos that show Russian prisoners of war being essentially murdered after they've surrendered have been posted by Ukrainian soldiers. These are videos taken by Ukrainian soldiers and then posted on the internet. Essentially as a point of pride, in the belief that they are somehow or another frightening or horrifying the Russians, who knows. But I also think there's another sinister dimension to this. I think there's an interest in Ukraine, particularly in Kiev or Kyiv, to ensure that there can be no negotiated settlement between Ukraine and Russia, not so much because of people in Kiev that might be willing to talk, but I think there's growing fear that Washington will ultimately abandon them.
As Russia continues to destroy energy infrastructure and kill Ukrainian soldiers on the front lines in Donbass, and as Ukraine continues to shell civilians in Donetsk and release videos of its war crimes, anger is reaching new heights on both sides, making peace an even more distant prospect. Jenny Miller, Donbass.
Mm-hmm.
The repercussions of the war in Yemen and the difficult economic conditions continue to take a heavy toll on Yemeni patients. Yemen's Ministry of Public Health and Population held a press conference to shed light on the impact of the continued Saudi siege on thalassemia patients. Those suffering from this disease need to get blood transfusions every 3 weeks and must stay on medication for life.
Our main concern is the lack of medicines for thalassemia patients. These medicines, if available, are very expensive in addition to the lack of necessary medical examinations. We have 20,000 registered patients, while the real numbers are many times higher. These children need special medical care, and we hope that international organizations will stand by them by providing them with what they need.
The Yemeni Health Ministry has recorded nearly 500 deaths due to the lack of only one of the drugs used to treat thalassemia. The ones grappling with the disease seem to be losing hope as time goes by. With their health constantly deteriorating, they are desperately asking for help from international organizations, including the UN.
We suffer a lot from thalassemia. Medicines are not available. We need expensive medicines such as growth injections. We also suffer from a shortage of blood donors, which is what we need continuously.
We greatly need to be provided with important medicines that have not been available since the beginning of the war, such as iron withdrawal treatments. Because our iron level is high due to frequent blood transfusions, which also causes frequent infections.
Saudi Arabia's siege on Yemen and the ensuing shortages of food and medicine is putting more lives at risk every day. The healthcare system is feeling a massive strain, and the international community has yet to take any definitive steps towards ending the crisis here. Abdul Latif Loshali, Sana'a.
The Italian government has been authorized to send, when it sees fit, military assets, materials and equipment to Ukraine until December 31st next year. The go-ahead has arrived from Italy's lower house, the Chamber of Deputies, which has passed a motion presented by the right-leaning parties backing the government coalition and supported by some opposition groups, including centre-left Democratic Party and centrist Italia Viva Azione. Italy has so far classified the arms it has been sending to Ukraine, but some media have suggested the next package will likely include air and missile defense.
9 months after the start of the conflict, sending weapons to Ukraine is no longer the way to go. We must put peace talks on the table and work all together for a UN-backed peace conference promoted by the EU.
Support for Ukraine has been a contentious issue within the ruling coalition, with Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni positioning herself as a staunch supporter of Kiev. However, her partners Matteo Salvini and Silvio Berlusconi, respectively leaders of the League and Forza Italia parties, have been so far much more ambiguous due to their historical ties with Moscow and President Vladimir Putin. The two have repeatedly stressed the urgency of stepping up efforts to promote peace negotiations.
Giorgia Meloni is firmly and strongly linked or attached to the partnership and the alliance with the United States and with NATO. So I don't think she will do something to promote compromises or peaceful or diplomatic solution.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has recently said, quote, "The Western alliance intends to keep fighting for Ukraine until it wins back all the territory Russia has seized since 2014. However, there seems to be an open wedge between the parliament and the Italian people. Latest polls show that more than half of Italians advocate for peace negotiations between Russia and Ukraine, and only a third are okay with a country sending more weapons to Kiev.
Peace talks must be started now. They have to find a solution to end this war. This situation is dangerously taking us toward a brink.
We are being run by governments of weaklings in the pocket of NATO, and the Meloni government is no different. Our constitution clearly says Italy rejects war.
It's not anymore a war between Russia and Ukraine. It's about all of us. We begin to feel exhausted.
The approval of the motion in the lower house on supplying weapons to Ukraine also included a provision which increases military spending to 2% of GDP by 2028, as required by NATO. The motion is currently under discussion at the upper house. The Senate will have the final say on the matter. Max Civili, Rome.
Pakistan has hosted a dialogue platform for the OIC member states to boost cooperation among them in the field of science and technology. Senior officials representing Iran, Kazakhstan, Tunisia, Qatar, Malaysia, Indonesia, and Pakistan attended the meeting, while Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Turkey, Azerbaijan, United Arab Emirates, and Cameroon participated via video conference. The first senior officials meeting of the OIC Forum was aimed at strengthening scientific cooperation and to encouraging major technological initiatives.
This forum provides us opportunities of bilateral, multilateral cooperation. So one or two or several countries can work together. With Iran, of course, we have a very strong cultural, historical and scientific collaboration. And of course, Pakistan and Iran can work together.
Iran's Deputy Science Minister Peyman Salehi told the meeting that OIC was established to strengthen unity and collaboration among Islamic countries. He offered the participants Iran's cooperation in the field of science and technology.
This collaboration between 15 countries may have a very fruitful outcome in the near future. Therefore, we arranged for the first meeting of ministers that will be held, I think, about 4 to 6 months later.
The Iranian minister further said that despite the sanctions imposed by the West, Iran is self-sufficient in the field of science and technology and has invested big in its infrastructure and commercialization of technology.
In 2021, Iranian scientists published about 78,000 papers, peer-reviewed papers in international journals. And at the moment, we are in the rank 15 in the world. We have established about 50 science and technology parks in Iran, more than 240 incubators, and so on.
Participants in the meeting discussed in detail the objectives, terms of reference, and working procedures of the OIC 15 and recommended them for adoption by the ministerial committee, which is scheduled to be held in the near future. The presence of Iranian officials in the OIC meeting shows that Iran is not dependent on the East or the West, and it's ready to boost its political and scientific cooperation with various countries across the globe. Nasser Kazmi in Islamabad.
South Korea's container and cement truck drivers are out in the cold, on strike with no extension to an agreement they say ensures safe cargo transportation and livable incomes. The union also wants tanker trucks, auto carriers, and delivery vehicles included in their deal. The strike action has widened to Seoul Metro Subway, with other transportation workers also threatening walkouts.
Believing in the government's commitment to the constitution and expansion of the safe freight system, we held off the strike and waited. But the system expires in a month, and the government's promise has not been kept. So we had no choice but to bring out our last card, the strike card.
Slowdown in construction and cargo delivery has already caused hundreds of millions in damages each day, with 5,000 truckers off the job. The slowdowns are rippling through South Korea's export-led economy as the strike enters its second week. President Yoon Suk-yeol this week ordered cement truck drivers back to work, with construction companies reporting losses into the tens of millions of dollars.
The foundation of our industries is in danger of being devastated. Even people's daily lives are being threatened. There is no way to justify the act of taking the lives of people and the national economy hostage to accomplish their own interest.
The Yoon administration has vowed to deal sternly with the illegal strike action.
The truckers were on strike just 5 months ago, but that strike only ended with the extension of the safe trucking freight rate system through the end of this year. With